to the 19th episode of Radio Thule, the Paranordic podcast from nordiskradio.se. My name is Lucas Lindgren, and with me today are Andreas and Haldan. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Hello, hello.
Hello, yeah. This episode, we're going to talk a bit about what's colloquially called the second pamphlet of Riis-Knudsen. Paul Riis-Knudsen, National Socialism, a left-wing movement. And just before that, we're just going to check if there's any interesting news we can bring up before starting with that one. Haldan mentioned the elections in Denmark. I'm not really read into it. It went a bit under the radar for me. But what I've seen, it almost seems like it didn't really change much. Or am I wrong there?
Well, I mean, first of all, like Mette Frederiksen, she called it, you know, she thought she got a quick popularity boost. Her popularity had been a bit going downhill, as most social democrats have been doing, because, you know, these system parties that can't really deal with the problems properly, right? So they're just bleeding voters. So she, after, you know, all the Trump stuff, she got a little bit of a boost, and she called this election, right, before time. So I guess that's why it went under the radar. And yeah, it didn't really go to her favor, because the social democrats had the worst results in, what was it, 100 years or something like that. So yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, that's one interesting thing I read. And if I don't remember wrong, it's the same in like Germany also, where the social democrats run really bad.
Yeah, it's I think it's a trend all over Europe, where they're bleeding, like Labour and Conservative Party in the UK as well, also doing really poorly. And pretty much, you know, I'm not really an expert, but you know, people are becoming more radical. So, you know, these centrist parties, they can't deal with the current landscape. You know, they, you know, then this isn't just where you need to go out and, you know, go to the farmers or the workers in the factories or whatever, right? You know, it's, you know, the voting block you have, you know, like, you know, these hard, you know, labor force, you know, who working with their hands, and you have, you know, these IT people in the cities and immigrants and things. So what ended up happening is we're seeing a lot of like a bit more smaller right-wing parties emerging, although Dansk Folkeparti had a really, really good election. They got a lot of votes, and because they'd lost a lot of votes recently, so they'd regained a lot of them. And then the Social Democrats were losing to the other side of the spectrum, the SF, the Socialist Party, the Socialist People's Party, and Enhedslisten in Copenhagen and things like that. So, they're not radical enough for the left, and their, you know, their immigration stance, which they took up to sort of bring a lot of Danes onto their side, didn't work either. So they're in a bit of a conundrum, I think. So yeah. I think what we're seeing now is Lars Løkke, if anyone's been following Danish politics at all.
Yeah, I've heard the name at least.
Yeah, so he's like, you know, he did pretty well with the moderates, right? And he's the center block, and I think, I don't know how many managed to go, under 20, I think, but around there. And so now he's going to decide who will make the new coalition. He'll decide what he wants, because the red bloc, even though they did the best, they didn't get a majority. So we'll have to see what's going to happen.
But do you think anything will actually change?
No, but what we're seeing is people going away from these centrist parties, right? And I'm not, you know, obviously, if there was a National Socialist Party, I'd want them to join them. But I think it's only good that, you know, people are looking for more radical alternatives. You know, they're looking to the center of politics, these large center coalitions where all the parties are the same. They're not looking towards that. They're looking for a bit more radical. So if the communists are getting more votes, I see that as a win for us as well, in a strange way, like in an indirect way. So people are coming more radical and not believing in the system.
Yeah. Maybe they'll continue the journey afterwards when they see that also these communist parties and green left parties and the more radical in the liberal democratic sense that they're shit parties also. Maybe they'll look for something outside of the parliament.
Yeah, I mean, you know, never. I mean, a liberal is always going to shock you, and you know, the sort of the excuses he can make from stuff, the cognitive dissonance, right? I mean, but and the thing is, you know, a lot of these people, they don't live with immigrants and things like that. They live in, but you know, they live in these, you know, what's it called, where they make these areas like a lot more expensive to live in, so they don't really get exposed that much. So yeah, I mean, it could definitely be true. You gotta hope so. I mean, you know, Hitler was, you know, he was definitely afraid of having left-wing people join his rallies, and because he knew he could see reason, you know. And in the end of the day, we are maybe a left-wing party, as we'll discuss today, right? So yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't, well, we'll get into it later on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, did you have any specific news from Finland, Andreas? There was that one. Did we talk about any Finnish news last episode? Did we talk about that hate speech thing with the Bible and so on?
Or? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, because that was pretty funny. There were some woman who was like a politician or something that quoted the Bible in like an
we talked about her before.
Yeah,
she was the crazy Zionist bitch that
exactly
was afraid that she wasn't gonna get to deny the Holocaust on the Palestinians, which is a law that she was like responsible for putting through. And I tried researching this hate speech law. It was in its current form, it's been like how do you say, like, changed several times since 95, but the groundwork was laid in 95, and she was in parliament then. So it would be hilarious if she fell like two times on laws that she herself has passed. But yeah, this time she had, I guess it happened a long time ago, but she said that marriage is between a man and a woman, basically like seeking support in the Bible. Which, of course, you can't do in Finland, because like that would make gay people sad, or something.
Yeah. We always in Sweden we've like historically looked to Finland as the less woke country of the two, alternative of the two, but yeah. With this little oopsie, it didn't look good for Finland.
Yeah, no, you're gonna have to like beat that out of your head.
Yeah. It seems like Finland is in a better situation, like demographically, but the mindset that's needed for a really multicultural society, it's there. All the moving parts that are needed.
Yeah, we've discussed this to death before, but it's like authoritarian. I don't like to mix these two terms together, but like fascist faggotry. It's like you get the impression in Sweden, it's like they at least try to give the impression that it's soft, but here you're gonna learn to love the new multicultural rainbow Finland with violence, only violence.
yeah
I don't know, it's I can't really, I don't know how to explain it, but it just feels off, feels unnatural.
Yeah,
like they're doing it because it's like a fashion trend, but they don't really get it.
It's not like they really mean it, they just
no I guess it's because
do as they're told, or like do they do as they see other organizations and people do.
It would be like mimic
them, but yeah.
If Poland went like full gay all of a sudden, or another,
yeah,
or another for like former Soviet bloc country.
Yeah, yeah. The big thing this episode, we're going to try to talk about, the pamphlet or the short text called National Socialism, Left-Wing Movement, and it has a pretty interesting relationship with the one called National Socialism, the Biological Worldview, in that it's like the same length and it's written in the same way. But that it's not as known. It's a bit more unknown. It's looked upon as the like lesser known sibling of the two. But it has just by reading the title, you hear that it is meant to be like a bit outside the norm. Or it wants to make you think in a certain way, and so on. And I would say that. I also just want to say about the author Polaris Knudsen. We already did a disclaimer on him last episode, and so on. And this version or this pamphlet. A Left-Wing Movement. It was written in 1984, but what I've heard is that there is a newer edition in some way. He did some updates, but it's like this original version that's freely available on the internet. So that's why we've chosen this one. So in that way, like the listener can get the article in full and so on in its entirety for themselves if they want. Yeah. Just a question to you guys. What do you think, like, in general about the text? What are your general thoughts if we start there?
Well, I already kind of had that view from, like, it just confirmed what I already believed pretty much. My disgust has just grown like exponentially with conservatives and right-wing people, and I felt like a long, like, more and more distance to that side of politics for a long time. But I liked it more than the biological worldview, actually. Maybe that's just because, as we talked about before, that it's more, feels more on topic now, or
yeah,
feels more current.
It, like, at the moment, it isn't current in the way that, because it's written in 84, but in like the specific political situation that we're in right now, it's really current. Really applies to a lot of situation that we're put through right now.
Yeah, we have a lot of re-emerging right-wing ideas like coming in various different ways.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. But was there something in the text, Andreas, that you didn't agree with, or that you thought were like overblown or written in a weird manner,
I thought I both agreed and disagreed with, but there was one part where he said that we need to stop blaming someone else,
and we need
responsibility
exactly.
for everything, which
we
kind of need to do, but we're also like, do you tell that to the shop owner that gets his shop, like his store, burned down by the mafia, the way we're blackmailed by Jews?
Exactly. He puts a lot of like he puts like a lot of the blame on white people, or how you could say, I have some of the quotes.
He's also right about some of it, like
the
environment. We always, or it's a pretty common trope for National Socialists or nationalists to go around that we're all the white people are like a Disney princess, like animals are singing around us all the time.
But
in reality, we've been pretty good at destroying the environment and polluting the oceans. And I mean, there's always degrees to, of course, Indians are like, all the rivers are spewing out shit constantly, but I think that it can be a bit too black and white at times.
Yeah, absolutely. He also says, for much too long, we've joined in the choir claiming white power and ignored the sad fact that our race has had the absolute power for at least 2,000 years. And it is exactly this power that has led to the kind of society that we have today. And I would just say Jews. Like, absolutely, white people have done not good things. For example, for the environment and so on. But, the Romans didn't have the environmental problems that we have today and so on. So to say 2,000 years is a bit of a stretch.
Like, historically, it doesn't really make any sense. I mean, the Chinese at the time of the Romans were just as strong. And then when the Roman Empire collapsed, you know, it was just Arabs and, you know, those people just taking chunks of the West. I mean, by the 1400s, you know, they were at Vienna, right? Like the Turks. So, I mean, we were in a defensive war. And I mean, we were... I'll admit, you know, we had the cities, the different Italian city states, you know, they were fighting, and the French were like supplying, you know, these enemies with a lot of money and political support. But I wouldn't say we had like world hegemony until 1600s or something like that, 1700s, right? And you know, with the fall of the Turkish Empire, the Ottomans.
Exactly. He also says, like, this fatal trend, which by the standards of natural law has most certainly turned the industrialized white countries of the West into a far more degenerate state than any so-called primitive society of the third world, is violently supported by the right wing, which seems to think that everything would be just fine if only the blacks, the Jews, and the boat people were expelled. We know that in itself, this would not change everything at all. And there is also talking about like this, this inner problem with white people, like destroying the environment and so on. But like, if the Jewish problem and all brown people would be expelled from our countries, we would have a really good head start in like solving those issues, even the issues that we have with ourselves. Because even if white people like by themselves do bad things right now, the Jew and the Zionist is like it's blocking our ability to solve those problems.
But can you be talking about the messaging as well? Because I mean, we like, you know, a lot of movements today, it is just a lot of negativity, you know, like we have our points that we like to promote, but a lot of our message, like the Nordic resistance messaging is also, you know, get rid of them, get rid of that, you know, should it be more, you know,
he maybe just wants to nuance it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, I wasn't politically active in the 80s, but you could tell it was a different time. If right-wing people want to get rid of Jews and boat people, whatever that is.
you're right. I mean, it doesn't apply anymore, right?
No, they love them more than the communists.
But yeah, absolutely. It's weird how he describes, like, right wingers. He says, quote, "The only common ground National Socialism seems to have with the right wing is the racial issue." And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And then he says, "But here too, there is an extreme difference in the outlook. The right wingers believe that being white holds an absolute value in itself, which elevates the Aryan race over all other living organisms and give it a right to do with the world what it wants to."
Mm.
Yeah, and that just seems a bit black and white. I don't know. And just, yeah.
But who are these right wingers?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Even in the 80s, you know, the conservatives, like, now they've gone anti-immigration, right, as a political tool. But in those days, it was the left wing in America, or the Democrats, or whatever you want to call it. They were very against immigration because it ruined, the workers' ability to have, the share of, votes and
yeah, destroyed unions.
Yeah, and it was a way of union busting. Amazon does it, and things like that. So, I mean, I'm wondering who this right wing is. Is it like maybe a way of purity spiraling inside NetSuck or what? I'm a bit confused who these right wings are. Yeah.
I'm also a bit confused there, but like, these points are just some small points, because overall the text is really good. But some of these points, like that one, for example, just confuses you. But go.
The tone of the pamphlet, what did you guys think of that? Did it hit the point, or because, as we know, messaging has changed a lot. Now it's like 20-second videos, so the zoomer can keep their concentration on it. Do you think zoomers could consume this, or is it a bit cringe, or what do you think they would think?
No, in general, I think the tone is really good. It's as Andreas says, it's like really fits the situation right now, with like the right wing injection and so on into And another quote I just want to bring up is, also says, quote, "Our worst enemies are not the Jews or the communists, but the very people who, while calling themselves National Socialists, debase the fundamental concepts of the National Socialist philosophy through their behavior, thus confirming the distorted impressions of our ID conveyed to the public by our enemy." And I'm like, yeah, sure, that's a problem, and that's a problem in today's day and age, but that problem is created by the Jews.
Sounds a bit like a Republican bootstrap ideology.
Yeah, exactly. But that's created by the Jews, so yeah.
Mm.
But I agree with him, at least, that it's a problem.
Yeah, it's a he's blowing it a bit out of proportion, I think. That's the only issue I have with it.
Yeah. But I mean, you have to admit, while the Jews, they cause a lot of problems, they're not causing all of the problems, right? I mean, would Jews have been able to be so successful in our societies if there wasn't something they could, stick their fingers in and rip out, right? Maybe that's what he's referring to. I don't know. It's interesting.
No, there's a greed for them to exploit. I think it's that simple.
And they've been able to split us in different ways, split the women and the men, and now we have these the left wing and the right wing and all these other different political interests fighting each other, and immigrants and things, right? I mean, if we were a unified front, it would just be you'd cut off the head of the snake right away, right? Yeah,
it's the classic with the greed and the force. The Faustian bargain and so on. So that's a problem with white people. We have responsibility, but if one entity was removed, the ability for us to regain that responsibility would be a lot easier. But yeah, it's a bit wishful thinking. I don't know. He also has that classic thing where he talks about not copying like the Third Reich and Hitler too much. And I think we've talked about that before. But yeah, I'm really inspired by old Germany, but I understand what he means and so on. And I don't really think what he talks about is like old National Socialist Front in like Sweden, where they dressed up as literal brown shirts and so on. And no one in Sweden is doing that right now. So I don't really see it as a problem in the Nordics overall, but yeah.
And he also, he mentions a lot of like how we need to infiltrate like environmental movements, but it seems to me like today it's, you know, the modern environmental movements are actually, you know, being used as an attack on all white people, right? They're introducing these carbon credits essentially deindustrializing Europe with it.
I think the argument is that these like environmental movements and left-wing movements is that they are idealistic, but the right-wing movements are like total greed and materialistic. Mm. So yeah. If we like could form their idealism into something good, they would help us because left-wingers or the environmental movement, they are more revolutionary. So it's probably that is thinking, but it's a hard mission. It isn't easy to do.
Mm. Yeah.
Think of the difference between like one of these environmental terrorists. Like their ideas are retarded, but they're willing to die for them, to block a highway somewhere where someone could just come with a truck and run them over. A conservative will run away the very instant that he sees his stock portfolio go down.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would say like I have a bit of a nuanced view of how much responsibility and guilt can be placed on white people and like to what extent one can draw inspiration from the Third Reich. And also like he talks a bit about Hollywood, not Nazism and so on, where it says that people who just go around with the swastika are bad for the movement and so on. But as someone who like talks to and reads a lot of stuff from like new people in the NS movement, they can be a bit like that, but it's mostly just because they are young. It's not like they are bad people, and they can learn stuff. It's just that they're not on the same level intellectually. It's not like they're bad people. So I still think there can people who might seem to maybe Knudsen to be like Hollywood Nazis, that they can still be useful for the movement and have like a good heart and so on.
But I'm also guessing this was a worse problem in his time. Young skinhead movement at the time.
I absolutely see that, and that's actually one of the reasons for the Nordic Resistance Movement being created, is that the founder felt that the movement in general went in a subcultural direction, and he wanted to like bring back the normalcy. Like some form of like professionalism, or like not bring the movement to a subcultural direction and just make it more normal in some sense. But now, like the skinhead era is gone, so yeah, some people can be too much, absolutely. But I met skinheads. Young skinheads in the movement that can be really good, and there are not a lot of them. And I really see it as a problem anymore. That's one of the situations where we're not in the 80s anymore.
No,
I would say.
Yeah, just anecdotally, I've seen the skinheads I've seen have been very well behaved, while like middle-aged old men have been drunk and screaming their lungs out. So if anything, going just for my own observations, it's been the opposite problem.
Yeah, and the ones who, and like within the NS movement in the Nordics today, there are a lot of people that are like critical against the skinhead movement and skinheads overall. And there is a lot of criticism to be made, but they are often, these are often older guys that have been in the movement for a long time. And they're like big, their impression on how it was before, as Knudsen did. But like the few skinheads that are left and this, the few like youngsters who are a bit too much sometimes, it's not a problem in the same way.
Yep.
Absolutely. But that was like the only criticism or like nuance I wanted. The rest of the text is like positive for me, I would say. I think the text is well written. It contains a lot of like thought-provoking passages, and it has a reasonable, like a good message, and so on. And it has like this fun humoristic twist, which just calling itself left. And the thing about calling itself left, a left-wing movement, is that it's not left in the sense that a lot of people would think, but it's like left in a revolutionary sense. And he actually describes this at the start of the text. So that's pretty well made. So like the reader understands his position and how he rhetorically did what he did, why he did it, and so on. And I think the text starts, but the quote is, "For far too many years, it has been widely accepted that National Socialists are extreme right-wingers, and only rarely have they hesitated to refer to themselves as such. At a certain point, however, it became the official policy of the World Union of National Socialists to avoid the term right-wing, claiming that National Socialism does not fit into the pattern of right and left, and instead ought to be considered as standing above this distinction." And yeah, this is just a classic talking point. It's written in a very clear and constructive manner, and it's like it's essential for understanding the basics of our ideology. And yeah, he talks about like the history in pre-revolutionary France, where those who wanted to preserve the system of government more or less sat to the right in the National Assembly, and those who wanted more radical changes sat to the left. And that's where the terms came from. So like right for the reactionaries and left for the revolutionaries. And he says, quote, "Where National Socialists are to be found in this spectrum seems quite clear. We are left-wingers, no doubt about it. We do not want to preserve the present system or any part thereof." Yeah, so that's where that comes from. He also talks a bit about what differentiates Marxism from like National Socialism, and he does that really good also.
Have any of you ever called yourself right wing?
Like when I was 12, I remember.
Oh, I guess you can be forgiven for that.
I mean, it depends who you speak to. I mean, I've always considered myself a left winger, but you know, some people don't really understand the nuance of the context, right? So, you know, if they see left as commies and right wing as someone else, then you know, I think I've used it a few times there, but yeah.
No, but I remember like being like 12, 13, 14. I went to a multicultural school, and the ones who were the most positive to like immigrants and really pushed for it, at least in school, you know, teachers and so on, they were like social democrats. And I remember like my teacher being a social democrat and like her husband being a top guy in social democracy in the municipality and so on. So I really made that connection early on, that the social democrats in my town is who are doing this to me and just making my life sour, you know. And I remember like my father, who was a moderate or a right winger, at least voted in that way. He didn't care so much about that, and he were a bit against it, you know, but it, or just didn't talk so positively about them. So I just sensed overall that in my microcosmos, the Social Democrats were mostly they were the one like taking the initiative in multiculturalism. The right were also doing that, but because I was so young, I didn't read that much. I didn't watch the news that much or watch the newspapers and so on. So I didn't really see like the moderates with Reinfeldt and so on, Fredrik Reinfeldt doing what he did. So just in my life and the town where I came from were really red also. So that really, it got me to see myself as anti-left. And the thing also that when I was that age, around 10, is where the Sweden Democrats got into the Reichstag in Sweden. And they were a lot more controversial then. It's like, it was really socially alienating to be a Sweden Democrat. And yeah, even though the right hated them too, it just, the atmosphere in society was that the Sweden Democrats wanted to better the society. They were really controversial. They were right. The Social Democrats and the left party and so on were left, and they wanted to keep destroying Sweden. And therefore you were anti-left and right. But then as time went on and you read more, you saw yourself as somewhere in between.
Yeah. Okay. But would you guys think that, you know, the spectrum is getting weakened? Because like with Trump's movement, we saw the emergence of these like system critical, I don't know if you'd call, are they conservatives or what? But I mean, they didn't vote for Trump because he was a conservative. They voted for him because he would blow up the whole political system, right? So it seems like there's also on you know, on the right side as well, there's like a flanking maneuver where they're they're a bit revolutionish. What's your opinion on that?
The horseshoe theory is finally like starting to become true, where I guess it's more true in the US. We see if we're gonna get it here, if it's a delayed yeah. reaction, but you can definitely see them, like, they come together on the questions that they agree about, and the big thing right now is Israel.
Yeah.
I also want to add to my story that when I got older and I studied, like, political history more, I really came to, like, understand and appreciate, like, the revolutionary aspect of the left, and, like, according to the workers' situation and how the National Socialist Party in Germany handled itself and so on. So that really brought me to like appreciate and see myself as a revolutionary in that way, and in that way see myself as a left winger according to Knudsen and so on. But it actually took like 10 years immersing yourself in politics to come to that conclusion.
You started already when you were 10.
I remember like we had like our gang. So I started like we had our gang when I was like 10, 11. And I started thinking about organizing myself and so on, and was that age, and just thinking politically. Like we have this thing called like Valkompassen in Swedish. I don't know how you would translate that, Andreas. Like you can take a test.
I know what you mean.
Internet to see what party you are aligned with. And I remember being 10, I took that test on public service website, and I got Sweden Democrats. So when I got that in the test, and I know the test don't really they aren't, it's not realistic in a way, because I remember the previous leader in the Nordic Resistance Movement, when he took one of these tests, he's like, the number one party he got was the Sweden Democrats, and the second one he got was the leftist party, who are on opposite sides. So that just brings you to understand that the tests aren't that realistic. I just remember what I got, and I remember getting the Sweden Democrats as number one, and when I was 10, so that really broke me.
Yeah. There's a lot of bullshit questions in those tests, because they never go outside of the like mainstream political spectrum.
Yeah, it's just really practical questions, and set in this like it. They are asked in a way that you are either left or right.
Mm. For example, if they ask about immigration, like should we take in more or should we take in less? The question about sending them all home isn't an option in those tests.
Yeah, exactly. Something I also, a quote that I really, really liked, and that makes me think of like politics today, is a quote, "We cannot allow our enemies to determine what is National Socialist viewpoint and what is not. And we sure cannot leave all the good causes to the Marxists, just to please people who have proven to be useless to us anyway. We have already done that for far too long, and that is another reason why Marxists have been so successful and have been able to take over vast segments of our culture and intellectual life. While National Socialists have allowed themselves to feel obligated to say yes to NATO, the European Union, the atomic bomb, capitalism, and unlimited free enterprise, etc. It is time that this be changed. Let us not continue to do what people have been led to expect of us, and let us do what National Socialism teaches us to do, not what people think it ought to teach us." And this is a very important message, to don't just follow the stream of popular politics and be manipulated into accepting harmful positions. Instead, we should strive to analyze like every situation according to one's ideology and so on. And this just quote really describes right-wingers and like nationalists who call themselves nationalism, who like side with right-wingers. And just that he mentions saying yes to NATO, because that actually happened in Sweden later. And yeah, the Sweden Democrats flipped from being a nationalist party in 1988, when this was written, 4 years after that, and now they accepted NATO and EU. They no longer want to leave the EU, they want to reform it, they say, but that's just bullshit. So what he said actually became 100% true with the Sweden Democrats, who were nationalists when this was written, but now are right-wingers. So this was 100% correct, and he predicted the future. So that's really impressive.
Mm.
There's also, also in the text, he like talks about Germany and like the revolutionary situation that was in Germany, how bad they actually had it, and a bit on how good we have it today. And I thought that was an excellent passage that like compares the current revolutionary landscape to that of Weimar Germany, and I think that comparison is good for understanding like the mechanics of today's political struggle. And also a really good quote in the end of the text that really fits in today is, quote, "The main threat against the man most certainly does not emanate from Moscow, Peking, or Havana. There is absolutely no way you can blame the communists for the sorry state of the world today, for drug abuse, crime, pornography, nuclear rearmament, racial integration, pollution, and so on. Just the fact that the biggest problem today is the Judeo-American Empire, and so on. Maybe you can blame like communist China for pollution. He mentions pollution, but like in the Western world and with capitalism and so on. So I understand what he means, and it's very a good passage.
I mean, communist China at least has some solutions to their problems, don't they? Drive all electrical vehicles.
Yeah,
now?
they are ahead with electric cars. They are ahead with like creating batteries and so on. It's just the thing with Northvolt in Sweden. Like they wanted to create batteries.
No can do,
and just China is doing them better. And the thing with Northvolt was a really good example of how China actually is ahead. Because when people say China is ahead, in my mind, I still like instinctively think that they are just like weird Asian people. And 50 years ago, they were sitting in huts. So how can they really be ahead like us Aryan masterminds and so on? But then when you think of how the West has deteriorated and so on, and you just look at China, anything with Northvolt, they really are ahead in a lot of ways. So
yeah,
it's actually, well,
they're doing like useful stuff at least. So now Finland is having a debate in parliament about a third gender, like a judicial or an official third gender. So I guess we're going to have three genders here now. That's what they're wasting their energy on here. While they're building like magnet bullet trains in China.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, I still believe Aryans are more like creative and so on than Asians. And that's what we've seen in history. But they are still really high IQ. And they have this sense of not doing stupid things. They just... Like the Han Chinese do things that are good for the Han Chinese most of the time. White people do things that are good for like trannies and Jews.
Yeah.
Black people. So we are behind. And we have this like this cloud, this American entity that just, yeah, poisons everything. That's when we build something, we build like a data center for an American company, and it's like, yeah, doesn't really, an American company that then censors like white opinions online, so it's really counterproductive. It doesn't really give it like gives us thing, it like it's like the internet and those data centers maybe help us in our everyday lives sometimes, but it's like this slow way of just destroying our race. So yeah,
I had an argument with an older person. I wasn't really that serious. I was just kind of trying to provoke the person, and then I got mad myself. So it ended up with me screaming that can you find a video of Xi Jinping like shitting on Han Chinese people? I can find 50 videos of European politicians being like talking about anti-white shit.
Exactly.
I might have said like hail Marxism, hail Stalin or something like that.
Yeah, but you can't really find those things. They are just, but it really gives you this feeling that why can't we just be like them? Why can't we like have our own state and just do things that are good for us?
Yeah. Like Asians are ant people, so in their industrial revolution, it doesn't matter if they accidentally kill like 100 million Chinese, but
yeah, absolutely.
We don't act like that, so we could do it without killing like, I don't know, 50 million of our own people.
And I just don't want to like see black people and like gay propaganda everywhere. Like
no, it's highly unpleasant.
Their society is functioning without it, so why can't we?
The only black people you see in China is like at a museum exhibition where they show them off as monkeys.
Yeah.
So we started off like reading the pamphlet, and now we're ready to swear an oath of allegiance to Xi Jinping.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. No, not really. Like they're these like Eastern states, these BRIC states, they are different entities, but you can see that the Jews have shifted their focus like from communism to America. It's like you can see it by yourself with your own eyes.
Mm.
So yeah, and that is and they don't like love white people for that. They are their own entity. They have allegiance to their own states. They won't like save the white people for us, but what they will do is that they will battle with the American Empire, and that is because the American Empire wants to destroy everything. And when they battle the American Empire, that's good for us. It gives us like some
breathing room.
Yeah, exactly. And just think of a situation where American influence is removed from the Nordics and the Europe and so on. It would really let us like have our own ethnogenesis again. We've already had one, but just have it again. It would be really nice. And hopefully that happens now that America is gonna like destroy itself in Iran or drop a nuclear bomb and destroy the world or in some way change is coming.
I don't want to be like an alarmist and promise too much, but it looks really bad for the US.
Yeah,
and for us too, but I don't give a shit as long as the Judeo-American Empire collapses.
Yeah.
Or at least becomes a shell of its former self.
Yeah, Diesel in Sweden today, at least for one of the biggest companies in Sweden, reached 25 kroner per liter.
Mm.
And 25 is seen like as a bit of a milestone. And yeah, I'm pretty happy for it. Like, it's not good for like your economy, but it's a price worth paying. And yeah,
absolutely.
I still feel bad for like Swedes who are in a worse economic situation than I am, and I feel bad for them. But like, we need to remove Americanism, and while higher prices is not good, it needs to be done. It's not nice, but it needs to be done.
Yeah, people need to be made aware of the Jew tax.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like I did it or like Nazis did it.
No.
Like the Jews did it. So it's not even our fault. So, yeah. They could have just not bombed Iran. The strait would be open. So yeah.
But have you noticed, even here, the idea that US is controlled by Israel is becoming, I wouldn't say mainstream, but less of a controversial idea, at least.
Yeah, yeah. I see like regular Swedish people who, like, for a year ago would be much more pro-Trump. Like Swedish men would be much more pro-Trump and so on. Like half a year ago, 1 year ago, really like come to see that there's something weird with him. Like America and so on. Mm. It's not this white European country that they thought it would be.
No, it's a brown country. I don't really. It's obvious.
Yeah, yeah. Does anybody have anything else they want to talk about regarding the text?
I had some funny passages where he was shitting on the right wing.
No,
as at least a former TRS listener, this is my type of stuff.
Yeah, and I also just want to say, if someone new to our views listen to this podcast, we're not saying that we're actually left wing, like that we're communists who love it's just that we are revolutionaries. So it's like a play of words. So just people understand. 1 hour in, I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
But that's actually good with the text. As I said, he describes the naming of the text in the beginning of the text, so you actually understand how he thinks. You just have to have an open mind.
Yeah, I usually describe it as it's choosing between like AIDS and cancer. So if I have to make a choice between right and left, I'll choose left. But yeah, it, title doesn't mean much to me, as I assume it doesn't do to you. It doesn't to you either.
No, not really. But it's like in some way, like as I said, I've my political journey started with hating the left. So when like 1% of me reacts a little bit, but I rationally understand what he means. And I think a lot of people in the Nordics, they start by hating the left, at least if they grew up with like immigrants and so on. But yeah, it's just because those, and that also describes what he means by left being more revolutionary, is that why you start hating the left is because they are more idealistic, they are more revolutionary. More people on the ground pushed for a lot of bad things, and they were activistic with it. They were activists, and that's why you hated them. Confrontation happened really early with the right wingers. They thought the same, like all the right wing parties. While the left did what they did when I was young, the right was on the same page. They just weren't revolutionary in a way, and they weren't activists. So you didn't come to clash. It's only if you like read a lot or just had a bit of a more grown-up mind. But as a child, it was really clear that these communists, these leftists, they are like idealists. They are on the streets and they really believe this. That's the danger I saw. But as I grew up, I see that they are all the same shit.
He also makes a good point about right-wingers and conservatives basically like forcing or memeing leftism and communism into existence by refusing to give them to give the workers like basic how to say like workers' rights.
Yeah, just rights and dignity and yeah. Basic freedoms.
Working them to death for 6-7 days a week.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Hitler wrote about this in Mein Kampf, how he was trying to tell them that you need to give them something or you're gonna have a revolution on your hands.
It's almost like they wanted, almost like the Jews like wanted this to have this other part of the coin, to have this duality, to like control both sides of society, because they could have just given the workers more. It's maybe easy to see afterwards, but yeah, that's maybe where you can blame white people in some way. The Jews actually did it, but you can maybe blame some white people that they were too greedy. And if they weren't so greedy, we could have sold the whole thing in a better manner.
Yeah. And another quote I found is, it is a historical fact that nothing good has ever come out of the right wing. If it had not been for such revolutionaries as Copernicus, Kepler, Giordano, and Galileo, we should still believe that the earth is flat and the center of the universe.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's flat earth or claiming that the earth is round controversial here.
What did you say?
Is claiming that the earth is round controversial here.
No.
I was thinking we had problems with the moon landing last show.
Did we actually?
We were discussing if it's if we need to put a disclaimer on the moon landing too.
Yeah. yeah. But I actually have like, I know some NS people have like friends. I think the earth is flat and so on. But it's just, it's these like people who like conspiracies. It's as Cedric Stryker said in War Strike not long ago. Some people just like conspiracies.
Mm.
It's just a hobby, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I actually thought about that passage. It was a bit emotional. It's like he gave them he attacked right wingers. It was pretty funny written. Yeah.
As much as I hate them, I would have to admit that it's probably done something good sometime.
Yeah, I actually thought that for myself. Like, some good things. They must have done some good things.
Some economic development, like some small thing.
Yeah. Yeah, some of them have, like, defended natural values in some way. It's just that they haven't done it like close to our times. They did it before, but that's a problem with conservatives. They can only conserve like
homosexuality.
No, but I think like conservatives in like the 70s and
yeah
stuff.
Yeah, I know, I'm just
because like if you think about homosexuality, it actually became legal in Sweden in 75, I think. So like, yeah, the conservatives in 1975 were pretty good, but conservatism now, but that's like the problem with conservatives, as I said, that they can only conserve a specified time backwards, or how you could say it's like they cannot conserve 100 years in the past. They can like conserve 10 years in the past, 20 around there, like,
yeah,
7 years. Yeah, did you have any more quotes?
No. Not really, just the short sentence that I found.
Mm.
Oh, whatever. I can't find it, but it was, I'll paraphrase. It was basically, National Socialism transcends Hitler and National Socialism itself.
Mm, yeah, I remember that one.
So, yeah, I would kind of agree with that. I've been in the position of being called both like a fascist and a communist like at the same time.
Mm.
Like who cares? Are the ideas good or not?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with the statement rationally. Like, of course it transcends. Just look at the National Socialist movements that have been in the Nordics. Like, of course we don't do exactly the same thing. We adapt National Socialism to like the environment that we're in at the present time, but I like Hitler a lot, so I don't really want to say stuff like that because I want to have him like as an anchor and like really appreciate his historical role and so on. But of course, it's true that we can go on without him. It's been like 80 years, and yeah, we're still going, and our ideas are intact, at least in some of us. So yeah, absolutely. But I actually counted, and the text takes 40 minutes, I think, to read through around there. So it's not that of a long read. It's under 1 hour. So yeah,
it's 11 pages, isn't it?
Yeah, around there, I think. So yeah, if the listener has time, just read through it. Even if you don't agree with everything, as you've heard, we don't really agree with exactly everything, but the main message is good, and it really makes you think. So in that way, it's positive. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't really have anything more. I think we went through it in a good manner.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Yeah. But I'm going to have anything else they want to bring up.
No, it was a good good discussion. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I actually think I'm going to read the text once more.
Yeah, yeah, I listened to it. I put it in like text-to-speech. Now with AI, you can actually do text-to-speak pretty good. So I listened to it two times, I believe. I maybe read it like three times in total. But just reading it one time, it takes 40 minutes, and it's good.
Yeah, I went the opposite way and went to my parents and printed all the pages.
Yeah, we are not the same.
No.
Yeah. We'll release this episode in April. We'll be back in May. We don't really know what we're going to talk about. We'll keep it as a surprise to ourselves and to the listener. And yeah, if nobody has any last words, we can terminate the show for this time.
My last, say your evening prayers to Jakub for creating you. That's going to be my last words.
Yeah, that's a funny meme. That's a funny meme. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll say so. Everybody have a nice evening. And you'll hear from us next month. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you again. Bye.